When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the Sticks in the Six podcast. Here are your co-hosts, Andrew Forbes, Peter Barrichini, and Alex Hopton.
Uh-oh. You didn't hear Andrew's voice first. You're hearing my voice. That means something's wrong here. Uh-oh, what's happening? This is weird.
I know. This feels really weird, though. Yeah.
I know. I don't know, Peter. I'm kind of tripping out here a little bit.
I mean, it is Halloween, right? We deserve, like, you know, the suspense and everything like that, but...
This is how we're spooking the Sticks and the Six faithful. We're doing an episode without Andrew Forbes. Andrew Forbes is unfortunately not able to be with us for this episode tonight, but we've got you covered. I'm your co-host, Alex Hobson, here with my co-host, Peter Barrichini. And I know that Andrew normally starts these offs by going for a bit of a non-hockey related question. So, Peter, how you doing? How's the week been?
Yeah, like you said, it does feel a little bit off, but you know what? The show must continue, you know? I've been doing good so far, you know? Literally a quiet week. I will say this, though. So, obviously, both me and you, we share the same musical genre or whatever, and I kind of feel weird saying this, but I'm going to my first concert post-COVID in God knows how long, and I am super excited. I managed to get a hold of Blink-182 tickets.
No way.
Yeah, so Alexis on Fire and Pierce the Veil. I'm also looking forward to seeing those. Alexis on Fire returning, but I was listening to the new album today, and wow, it's everything I expected from Blink. I mean, literally from like the immaturity to the actual like songwriting and tone, it's like a blast from the past from all of their albums. But yeah, I am absolutely excited to go to that show. I'm loving this album, and yeah, that's been basically the highlight because I'm so excited for that. How are you doing, though?
I'm doing good. I mean, I'm not going to see Blink 182, Alexis on Fire, and Pierce the Veil, so I think it sounds like you're doing better than I am right now. But I've been doing well. I know that a big theme of our Sticks in the Six pre-episode banter last year was me talking about wreaking havoc on my men's division ball hockey league, the low rank. Peter, I gotta tell you right now, we got moved to the lowest division, which is exactly what we needed to boost our confidence and get us going again, because we are wreaking havoc on this league.
Sheer dominance at this point.
We are 8-1 in men's division 11 ball hockey, and we've got a total goal differential of let me see. Our goal differential is plus 45 currently.
Ooh, I'm assuming you're leading the team in scoring, though, right?
Peter, I would never brag about something like this, but I had to take a screenshot because it's likely the only time in my entire life I'm ever going to see this. I am leading the league in scoring.
Right now. Let's go. That's how you do it.
I'm putting up NH, and this, trust me, this absolutely has to do with the fact that I am super skilled, unbelievable ball hockey player, and certainly nothing to do with the fact that I've just been stat padding against teams that have depleted benches. But I'm putting up some NHL 23 be a pro numbers here. And when you're playing on rookie and you're making your NHL debut, I've got 26 points in 6 games so far.
Yo, that's how you do it, though. I remember when we did beer league one time with my buddies, and we were just so good. We were dominating that level, and we had to get bumped up, and it was only a matter of time where we just like, man, should we just, you know, continue just being trash or just endure it because we were too good for that? So I could easily relate on that.
Let me tell you, Peter, our first couple games of the season, the way that works in our league is first couple games of the season basically decides who's going to get relegated and who is going to get bumped up a division. So the divisions are kind of preset before the season starts.
Yeah.
But we started the season with an 8-0 win, 8-0 win. And then our next game was a 2-0 win. And then I want to say it was, our third game was a 12-0 win. So no goals allowed in the first three games. And we're starting to think, okay, I think we're going to get bumped up into the second lowest division instead of the lowest division. But then our fourth game, this actually may have helped us. We suffered our only loss because we only had six guys able to make it out that night, and the team we were playing had 14. So we lost.
Yeah, you guys must have been gassed.
We lost 6-5 in overtime, and I think that game kept us in the lowest division. So Peter, this is a big moment for French and Fried. We are currently pursuing our first ever championship as a team since
inaugural season.
Yeah, our inaugural season. There's our formation, I guess, since our formation in fall 2021. We've played, I think, five or six seasons since then. I think this is our sixth, and we have yet to win a championship. So this is a big year for us. Wish us luck, man. This is the year.
Wishing you the best of luck, man, because that sounds like you guys are in it to win it.
And we've been in it to win it for a long time. We've made it to the finals a couple times, but unfortunately, it never prevailed in the way that we wanted it to. So we're hoping that this year might finally be the year. So I guess
over the hump like the Leafs.
Yes, exactly. I guess with that being said, this is not the French and Fried podcast. It's the Sticks and the Six podcast. So we should probably talk some Leafs. How does that sound?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Six games into the season. The Leafs are 4-2 right now. We've already had, you know how it goes in Leafland. There's never any shortage of storylines and things to talk about. Even if there aren't really any storylines, we can always make something up and make something to talk about.
Naturally, yeah.
So 4-2 into the season. Peter, I guess the first thing I'll ask you is, you know, October is always a very, very sloppy month for the Leafs. I actually can't remember them ever having an October that didn't feature just some absolutely painful games to watch. So I guess my question right now, 4-2 through the first six games is better than we're used to seeing from the Leafs in the month of October. So in comparison to last year and the year before, notably, which both had really bad Octobers, what do you make of the Leafs six games into the season?
Yeah, again, you don't want to jump to conclusions or like say everything is going great unless you're the Vegas Golden Knights, Boston Bruins, or even Colorado Avalanche, who are all undefeated at this point. But it's still October. It's still early. You don't want to overreact, but there's still some things that are glaring with the Maple Leafs, particularly defensively. Obviously, you would like to see a little bit more consistency, a little bit more awareness, a little bit more smarts. I know Sheldon Keefe has alluded to that, especially in the first two games where, you know, they gave up, you know, five against Montreal, another four against Minnesota. And then, you know, it seems like all their mistakes caught up to them against the Chicago Blackhawks. They looked okay against the Panthers. And then again, major drop off with Tampa Bay, but they still managed to get the win. So a mixed bag of everything. You're seeing highs, you're seeing the offense playing well, you're seeing the lows. The defense and goaltending even at this point are kind of you don't want to like hit the panic button just yet, but there is some cause for concern if they can't turn it around. Again, it's still early, but you know what, I will say this, record wise I think this is probably the best October, if I can't recall. I may have to go and double check to see.
You're not far off.
Yeah. This is a better one than last year. That is for sure. Because I know last year was a really, really rough start. And now this time it seems like with every game, they're building a little bit of momentum. And it started with that Tampa Bay Lightning win.
Yeah. It looks like things are starting to kind of shape together. I mean, obviously, you're not going to see a team get into full flight until a decent bit into the season. A lot of that first month is just experimenting with different combinations, especially when you have so many new acquisitions like the Leafs do.
Yeah.
But it is good to see. I mean, you know, these last couple of games, the new guys who kind of struggled a little bit early on, Tyler Bertuzzi and Max Domi, they both have looked better in recent games as opposed to the first couple.
Yes.
So it looks like things are starting to kind of take shape. And when we talk about the first six games of the season, it's hard to come up with a better storyline so far. I mean, when you look past Austin Matthews scoring two hat tricks in two games to kick off the season, we talked about that last time. But through the first six games of the season, hard to come up with a better talking point than JT and Willie. I mean, these are two guys who, I mean, John Tavares specifically, it feels like every year there's some discourse about how his legs are going to finally catch up to him and how when he falls off, that $11 million is going to be really hard to stomach, et cetera, et cetera. And it seems like every year John Tavares just says, no, I'm not dropping off. Why would I drop off? So this guy's 33 years old. He's got 10 points, sorry, through the first six games of the season. And him and Nylander have just been wreaking havoc. And I mean, Matthews and Marner are both point-of-game players as well. They're the core four has been doing all the scoring so far. But JT and Willie are just on another level. And I feel like it's one of those things where when Matthews and Marner aren't torching the world, JT and Willie are. And when JT and Willie aren't torching the world, Matthews and Marner are. You've always got one of those two duos just wreaking some havoc. So, Peter, what do you make of the JT and Willie combo? And who do you think is a long-term line mate maybe for those two?
Yeah, I mean, when JT got his third, you know, the deflection against Washington, I'm like, man, the JT makes too much money to do nothing crowd is very, very silent right now, where he's just, you know, under a point or not just under a point, but like under like 2 points per game, you know, 10 and 6. That is absolutely impressive right now. And yeah, obviously, you know, you would like that contract to come off and, you know, he's still producing at that level. And like you said, he's 33 and it seems like there's still more to his game where he like uses that as, I guess he kind of uses that as motivation, but it seems like even last year he got off to a good start and he was still very effective and he was just at a point per game last year. So, you know, like you said too, it seems like when one is going, the other pair isn't. JT and Willie are going right now. They're just unstoppable. But imagine when both of them are clicking at the same pace and at the same rate. That's just absolutely lethal and dynamite. But you know what? We've seen the chemistry that both of them have had so far. You know, Nylander is just on a mission to get paid. I mean, that I think we could just both agree right then and there. And also for, you know, what he does specifically, like you see an elevation to his speed, the edges, the creativity. And it's just like, you saw the game against Washington. It was just like a puck on a string for him where he was just dancing and being the one to lead the charge. And that's what you wanted to see from Nylander consistently. We're seeing that early on. As for the top six or their initial top winger, I thought Tyler Bertuzzi did look good. Again, I think he's battling something right now, but there's still hope that he could try and turn things around. He looked a bit more comfortable yesterday. He seemed to be a bit more energetic, but I still think you got to go to Matthew Nyes at some point. You brought him in to be an impact player. He looked great and he's starting to show some chemistry with Domi and David Kampf. But at the same time, there's going to be a point where he needs to be elevated into the lineup. And we saw what he did in the playoffs with JT, you know, they feed off each other. And not only that, you know, he's living with the Tavares family as well. So he's gaining a lot of experience both on and off the ice too. I think it just seems like a perfect fit at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote an article the other day about how Matthew Nyes needs to stop being looked at as, you know, this prospect, like the way that he was last year, a prospect who's joining the team, who could make an impact here and there. No, they got to start looking at Nyes like a guy who can contribute every single night.
Yeah.
Because that's what he is. If you put him in the right position to contribute, he is going to contribute. Mm-hmm. And like, I think the biggest driver behind that take is not the fact that he's, you know, he puts up points or, you know, anything to do with like that. It's just when you watch him play against NHL players, he looks like he belongs. Like he uses his body. He's 20 years old. That's what we need to remember. This guy's 20. He's fucking 4 years younger than me. Like that's insane. Like seriously, man. Anyways, I'm sorry. I just kind of had a moment where I was like, damn, this dude is really,
it's that moment to make you feel better. He is 21.
Okay, so 3 years, that doesn't make me feel any better for the record. Yeah, 21 years old, but yeah, you forget that he's only 21 because he looks like a 30-year-old grown man out there the way that he plays. I mean, he's 6'3", he's 220 pounds, he goes into the corners, he can throw a big hit even if he's not, you know, like a Noah Gregor or Ryan Reeves hitting everything that moves when they go out there. Like he's a guy who can throw the body. And he just physically and mentally, he looks like he belongs. And the points will eventually come. So I'm not worried about any lack of offense. But if they put him in the top six and they let him go up against other teams' top sixes, I think he can make an impact.
Absolutely. And we saw how him and Domi kind of took charge of that comeback game against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Again, it was a little bit too close for comfort, but you know what? They got the depth scoring that they needed. They needed two guys that needed to get going. And they were fantastic feeds from Domi to Dyes. And you could just see their reactions after each one. You knew that these guys were in it, and even getting the in it to win it. And then even getting some of that ice time in overtime too. I think that was huge for like a confidence boost for both of them as well. Saying that, or Keith is basically saying, yeah, I can rely on you. I need more players to step up. I'm going to trust you a little bit more right now. Not to say that he didn't before, but you know, you saw the game changing play that he had. You saw him, and you know what? Something about Knies in big moments, I think it's starting to become a bit of a factor here. You saw him assist on the game winning goal to push Elise into the second round on JT's goal. You saw this one again in Tampa Bay. Two key goals and a 3-point night to cap it all off. I think that's very impressive for a young rookie of his potential. And I think a lot more, like, everyone just points to, you know, the puck protection, the smarts and the awareness. Everything is great in that regard, but I think his speed is very underrated and it's come a long way with the stride and his ability to just break free and create that separation. Obviously, I think that'll be a little bit more beneficial in the top six with someone speedy like Nylander, and with Tavares not being as quick, he serves as a good option as a trailer to, you know, make a drop pass, another passing option right there. And especially with his ability and hands in tight, I think both of those players, are all three of them actually, can do some damage at the high danger area. And I think that's going to be very, very key, considering, you know, obviously the Maple Leafs have the new NHL Edge shot speed, everything like that. I think the Maple Leafs are one of the best high danger teams in the league at this point right now. So you got to take that into consideration, and maybe Knies could do a little bit more damage in that regard.
Well, you also have to take into consideration the fact that Keith went out of his way to say to the media the other day, we need to give Matthew Knies more minutes. When he was explaining his decision to switch Domi and Knies, I think that was after the Chicago game. I want to say it was a couple days ago, but, like, Keith is not the kind of guy to just go and puff up and pump up his rookies to the media just to make them feel good. Like, if his rookie has a bad game, he's not going to be shy about it. But that's two instances in the past. The first time he ever did something like that was when he told the media that he couldn't find a mistake in Pontus Holmberg's game around last November when he was called up. And then he does it again here with Knies. He's being completely honest, saying, listen, we got to give him more minutes. So when you consider that your head coach is saying that about a 21-year-old rookie, it should be a bit of an indicator that this guy's not just a prospect who can make it, you know, who could score an extra goal every now and then. This is a guy who can make an impact every time he's out on the ice. And I think we saw that in the Tampa Bay game. I mean, Knies and Domi, before that game, nobody had put those two together as the two guys to be difference makers and to put the team on their back. But they in a matter of 3 minutes, those two connected twice and they single-handedly brought the Leafs back into that game. So I think that Knies does have to be looked at as more than what he is right now. I think that he's a guy that I do like that they're using him on the penalty kill. I think that's pretty decent. And I think that's why it's a little easier for me to stomach that he's not on PP2. Because, you know, at this stage of his career, if we're going to pick between him getting 30 extra seconds of power play time on the second unit or him getting decently regular minutes on the penalty kill and developing those defensive skills early, I'd be happy to take him on the PK over the power play. So overall, it looks like he's got potential to be a guy that contributes in so many different areas for the Leafs. And if they make some noise this year, he's going to be a big part of it.
Yeah, and I agree to the extent with the PK. You want to try and ease him in a little bit, but I think with him, with his offense, I think maybe the power play probably could have been a bit better, but I understand where, you know, Keith is coming from too. You want to get like a lot of people in early on to see what they're capable of. And, you know, this guy is a two-way player. Like, he can play on both sides of the puck. And also, I think with time, it won't be long before we see him on the power play. I think you got to give him that shot at some point, if and when he feels that he's ready. Because in an instance where, you know, maybe, you know, Matthews and Marner are completely gassed after a big shift and they get a power play, and who are you going to put on? you're obviously looking to the second unit. Obviously, you could probably change up Knives and give him that moment where they have a lot more zone time and a lot more opportunity to kickstart off before the Stars could come on. So I think in that instance, you can look to Knives and maybe readjust your lineup, maybe get him some reps in practice and then see what he could do in a game. If and when that happens, because obviously with his ability in the slot or even in front of the net with his hands, he could do a lot of damage.
Well, Peter, six games into the NHL season, or it's into the Leafs season to be more specific. And you know that every year the Leafs could be 6-0-0 to start the season. There's going to be discourse about something. The Leafs, yeah. Leaf fans just cannot, we cannot operate as human beings and as sports fans without discourse. And there's always got to be something to have discourse about. So the guy taking that job early this season, I would say that it was down to a very narrow final between John Klingberg and Ryan Reeves. But in the end, I think you have to give the discourse cup to Ryan Reeves. I have a really tough time with this because when Ryan Reeves,
for a little note, if anyone isn't on social media or even on Twitter, you'll see the discourse between Ryan Reeves between you know the analytics side and the intangible side kind of thing. That's just a little background note.
So Ryan Reeves has kind of helped me learn something about myself as a hockey fan, and it's that I don't identify with either extreme side on the spectrum of fandom. And when I say the spectrum of fandom, I mean one side of the spectrum is all of your older demographic that bows down to Don Cherry and says, screw analytics, it's all about the eye test. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you've got the people that sit and stare at a calculator for an entire game or a graph, and they don't actually watch the games. I spent the longest time during Kyle Dubas's tenure, and not just in his tenure, like before he was officially brought in as GM, and then after he took over as GM, I spent so much time battling the first end of that spectrum. All the older fans that were like, analytics, screw analytics, we don't need this, it's not important. And, you know, it was a big, we remember,
who needs numbers?
War. We remember the big war on analytics back in 2013. You know,
oh yeah,
Steve Simmons saying he doesn't play, and he doesn't want to watch players play in the Corsi hockey. You know, we all remember that era. So I spent the longest time battling against those fans that act like analytics don't mean anything. But the way that the people on the other end of the spectrum have been handling the Ryan Reeves signing has made me sway to the other side a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, every single game there is a tweet out there about how Ryan Reeves' expected goals percentage dipped low and wasn't good. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I don't understand why we have to go out of our way to talk about this every single game. Right? Ryan Reeves signing, sure, you can absolutely make an argument that $1.3 million a season for 3 years might not be the best value for a 36-year-old enforcer. I get that. But I just don't understand, like, why there's always got to be a guy that fans band together and just debate every single day, when the answer might be as simple as, hey, this guy is brought in almost exclusively because of the way that he brings a team together. That's what Bill Guerin said when the Wild traded for him. He said that on Overdrive. Mm-hmm. I know you shouldn't be spending $1.3 million on vibes, but at the same time, it's hilarious that even when the team wins, we're talking about a fourth liner who doesn't have a good expected goals rating. Because again, if he's there to improve the morale of the team and guys like Austin Matthews are crediting him with turning games around and bringing momentum, who cares about his expected goals? He's a fourth line player.
Yeah.
And where do you stand on this, Peter?
Yeah. Again, from what I understand, if anyone doesn't know, expected goals is basically the goals or the amount of goals that you should get based on the quality of shots that you get per game or during the game. That's how I understand it. If I'm wrong, so be it. I don't use it all the time, but if there's an instance, I do use it a bit. And yeah, when you look at it from a basis or line or numbers and line basis, yeah, the fourth line doesn't produce 32.3. If you're looking at that as a line, Reeves himself is, had it right here at 36.28 at 5-on-5. And on the surface, yeah, it doesn't look good. But like you said, this is a player that brings the morale. He hypes the team up. He gets them motivated. He gives them a sense of reassurance that, you know what? We're going to change the dynamic of this team. We're going to be a little bit more loud. We want to be a little bit more energetic. And he does that on a consistent basis. And everyone is so quick to point to the analytics side of it. I think there have been moments where you watch the game, and there have been moments where Reeves has played relatively well. I think there was, you know, one instance early on. I think I can't remember if it was Tampa Bay or Florida. He broke up a play and it led to a good chance. Obviously, he doesn't have the best hands or finishing ability, but it did create something. You know, he has that awareness to quickly turn the tide and transition the other way. Then there was that game against Florida where the first goal, you know, John Klingberg, you know, blindly passed it away, but also everyone is caught out of position. And you see Ryan Reeves pointing to David Camp that that's where you need to be. That's where you need to go. He at least has a sense of how the game should be played and where everyone should be. And that alone is huge, especially for a fourth liner who has that mentality or that reputation of just being that enforcer, you know, the guy that lays the big hit every single time. And even so, I think I can't remember when, but I think he even said that, you know, defensively, I think he has made some good plays as well. I could be wrong. I can't remember which game.
Keith said that after the second game, I think it was
the second game. Yeah. And even and against his former team, the Minnesota Wild too. And even during the preseason, you know, him and Arbor Jacki were like getting into like not a scrum or whatever, but they engaged physically. He beat him out, went to the net and got a good scoring chance or scoring opportunity. Honestly, yeah, the numbers aren't going to look pretty at times because it is the fourth line, but this is still that kind of player that they lacked when they went up against, you know, Tampa Bay. You know, when you see other fourth lines, yeah, they may have better numbers, but they still have that tough guy in there that can do a lot of damage and can be intimidating. Everyone's going to point to sound bites, but you know what? I think it's great. I no matter how you look at it, whether, you know, it was the Jacki fight, it was the Marcus Foligno fight, he's a good soundbite. He knows how to take pressure away from everybody, and he's doing it very well. I think this has been huge for the Maple Leafs, numbers aside, because they needed someone with his personality on the team.
Yeah, I'm glad that you brought that up about that goal, because we saw Frankie Corrado do a really good breakdown on that first goal against Florida.
That's where I saw it, the replay, because he's pointing right there. I'm like, I completely missed that because of Frankie's breakdown.
Yeah. Reeves was the only guy on the ice at that time who knew what was going on. Yeah. So there's just the thing that I keep coming back to is there's so many other things that we could be talking about other than Ryan Reeves. Like, just get over it. This is a guy who he's here to play a physical game. He's here to take pressure off of the Stars. He's here to take those sound bites to the media. Like, he's done his job so far. And the only thing I will say I was a little disappointed in was when we saw Nylander take that cross check against Florida and Reeves.
Yeah,
there wasn't anything done about that, because yeah, it's great to see Ryan Reeves come out and flex in his opening during the season opener introductions.
Beautiful.
It's great to see him fight Arbor Jacki. It's great to see him fight Marcus Foligno the following night. It's great to see him throw these hits and drop these funny sound bites and quotes. But that game against Florida would have been the perfect time for him to send a message, because we remember last year. Obviously, Sam Bennett injuring Matthew Nyes, taking him out of the series. We remember Radko Gudas he hurt David Camp briefly on a hit. And then we remember him screaming in Joseph Woll's face. Like, that would have been the perfect moment right there after Nylander took that check from behind to send a message. But then at the same time, I almost wonder how much of that was Sheldon Keefe not wanting to take an instigator penalty when they're only down by one. Yeah. So I don't know. That's one of those. I'm not going to overthink that, but it definitely would have been nice to see Reeves get out there and go after someone and just finally see the Leafs send a message in a game like that, because Florida physically has bullied them a lot. So,
And one more thing to add to that too, obviously, you know, that was the second line out there. You don't know when Reeves is going to face Kulikov if they get that matchup or whatever, unless Keith purposely puts him out there to go send that message. But you know what? I think it was on the Steve Dangle podcast where I think all three of them said that, you know what? What if Reeves isn't on the ice? Who's going to stand up in something like that? Because that could have been a really bad hit, and that could have potentially put Nylander out long term. Thankfully, he's okay. But, you know, that's up to you know, the captain who was on the ice to send a message. That's up to someone else on the back end to jump in and be like, you know what? We're not going to take that at all. So there has to be someone out there that could still mix it up. I mean, even in the preseason game, or I think in that final or the first game where, you know, Bertuzzi's mixing it up and you see Matthews come in and you see Gio fly in, even saw Marner mix it up. If you need everybody to mix it up and send that message, I'm all for that. And especially if Reeves isn't on the ice, because that has to have a trickle down effect.
It does. And you know, that was the first indicator right there where I was like, maybe this could be something that bleeds in for the rest of the season. When Matthews and Marner jumped into the scrum there, that's something we've never seen from this era.
Yeah.
So hopefully that does end up being the case. I just always end up telling people when they complain about Ryan Reeves, it's like, okay, I get it. This guy is probably making a little too much money right now, but it's one of those things where you as a fan watching hockey on TV can't understand the impact that he has unless you're in the dressing room. And I'm not going to pretend like I understand that impact either. It's one of those things that it matters most to the players. If it matters for the players, then it should matter for everybody else. So another thing we should probably touch on before we move away from Leaf talk is Joseph Woll basically doing everything that he can to ensure that there's no goalie controversy this year.
Yeah.
So you look at the stats to start the season, not really a secret who's been the better goalie. Ilya Samsonov, record of 2-1-0, but he's carrying that 434 goals against average, 831 save percentage. We saw him get pulled against the Lightning after allowing 3 goals on 4 shots for the 250 save percentage. Not a great start to the season for Samsonov. On the other hand, it's been an amazing start to the year for Joseph Woll. He carries the same record, 2-1-0, but he's got a GAA of 1.44 and a save percentage of 958. So this is a guy who all 3 games he's played, obviously the Chicago game was a loss, but that was the Leafs' worst effort of the season so far. I know it because I was in the stands to watch it live.
Pain.
Happy birthday to me. But either way, Joseph Woll was the easiest part of that game. You know, you watch the guy in net. If you were reading Twitter, you were reading social media, reading your Leafs articles the past couple days, you know that Max Domi compared him to Carey Price. And don't take that comparison. Don't say he's...
Don't take it out of context.
Yeah, he's not... He was not comparing Joseph Woll as a goalie to Carey Price, the goalie. He was comparing his ability to stay calm, his demeanor in net, and that's something you can compare to. You can have 2 goalies that are both calm. Anyways, so Joseph Woll has clearly looked better than Ilya Samsonov to start the season. Where do you see the goaltending battle right now, Peter?
Yeah, I mean, when you saw that game, there did look like there was going to be a goalie controversy because, you know, there have been, it seems like every single season there's been a goalie controversy. What do you do between Frederik Andersen and Jack Campbell? Both Campbell and Peter Mrazek are struggling. Where do you go from there? You know, last season, there's also, you know, Samsonov and Murray and then Woll coming in as well to, you know, throw his name into the hat. And I, first and foremost, I do agree. Don't take that Domi comment out of context, because when you see him in net, you can tell that, you know, Woll does have that calm demeanor and no panic in his game, similar to that of Carey Price. Now, Joseph Woll is probably not going to be Carey Price, but you could say, you know, it reminds me of this. Just like Connor Bedard's shot kind of reminds me of like Austin Matthews. So-and-so player kind of has the same speed as Connor McDavid. Are they going to be the same player? No, they're going to be in their own right. Full stop. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk for that. But yeah, I mean, I even wrote about, you know, Joseph Woll playing his way into earning more starts. And you have to consider that right now, how he came in and stopped the bleeding against the Tampa Bay Lightning, where he faced a lot of high quality chances. And, you know, late in the game, you know, that pad save on Kucherov, you know, tracking the puck very well. Same thing happened against the Washington Capitals, where, I mean, that Ovechkin goal, nobody was going to stop that. 3 players were in front. I believe Carlson finds Ovechkin in front when all the penalty killers are on one side of the ice. Wall's not stopping that. Like, let's be realistic. But he was dialed in and saw every single shot, even when Ovi was peppering him in the beginning on that breakaway where he went to the same move back to back. So he stayed with him. Good on that. He just seems more calm. And I can say this about Samsonov. He went back to the Samsonov that we saw with the Washington Capitals. Being over-aggressive, not being in at the right spots, not being square with the shooter, overshooting with his lateral movements. He needs to take a step back and calm down, because there were instances last year where that play started to creep back in. He was able to, you know, get, you know, mentally focused and was able to bounce back. That still can happen, but it's not going to serve him well when Joseph Woll is, you know, pitching these kind of numbers, you know. Over 920 save percentage. The goals against average are low. There's a guy in net that you can rely on where you're not going to give up three goals on four shots. And even Keith said, that's unacceptable at this point, especially when he signed that contract. You're basically on another prove it year with this team. And we're not seeing that early on. Again, he can turn it around, but the way that Joseph Woll has played, I obviously this is going to be out when the Maple Leafs play the Dallas Stars. Future me, I think Joseph Woll should get the start against Dallas and then Samsonov against a lesser competition against Nashville. I'm not quite sold on putting Samsonov in just yet. I think he still needs to work his way in practice and earn that trust back from Keith that he could rely and be the backstop in net. But also, it'll be a good test for Woll, because you already faced a tough team in Tampa Bay. Now try and do it and replicate it against the the Dallas Stars, because they're just as tough as a team offensively as the Lightning. And also, just for me, from like a prospect perspective, both him and Jake Oettinger were on the same national development team program in their draft year. Both were the backs off. Both got drafted in the same year, I believe. And it will be a good story to see both former teammates go head-to-head in the NHL when they're both making, you know, timely starts. So I'm a big, so obviously one performance wise, but also that good, that feel good story, because why not?
Just for the purpose of being the, well, actually guy.
Okay.
Joseph Woll was drafted the year before Jake Oettinger, but still, either way.
Okay. But they were still former. Yeah. Okay. My mistake.
Former teammates. No, no.
So I much just, for being, you know, the draft insider. Or
I had to be the well, actually guy.
All good, man. All good.
But you know what? I agree. I think that Joseph Woll has clearly played better. And I think that the Leafs do need to be operating on a ride the hot hand basis. But that being said, I also think that the Leafs, like Leafs fans, need to kind of take a chill pill on some of the Ilya Samsonov takes that I've been seeing. He's had a really bad start to the year. And I know that Leaf fans are on edge, because we've seen Campbell go through awful stretches like this. We've seen Mrazek's entire season. We've seen Frederik Andersen go through bad stretches. We saw Matt Murray go through bad stretches last year. I know that we hate it when the goalie can't make a save, but Ilya Samsonov has done a lot more good in Toronto than he's done bad. Mm-hmm. And I'm not willing to, you know, as much as I think that Joseph Woll has a leg up on him in the battle for the crease right now, I don't think that we should just be moving on from Ilya Samsonov just like that. We're going to need both of them this year. And, you know, the Leafs are going to need both of them to be at their best. And, you know, whether he turns that prove it deal into a longer term deal, or he uses it to test free agency, whatever. As of right now, the Leafs need both of those goalies to be doing well. And I think that Samsonov still got it in him. I just think that right now, Joseph Woll is the guy that should be getting. If you're going to be operating on a basis of two starts to one, I think Joseph Wall's got to be getting the two.
Absolutely. And you know, it just, you know, Keith even said, you know, this is him pushing. He wants that internal competition from everybody. And for him to do that right now, this early on, how do you think Woll is feeling right now? I'm pretty sure that the sky's the limit for him of what he could accomplish. And again, he's had a rough start pro wise when he went from, you know, college to the AHL. He's had injuries. He's had dealt with inconsistencies, but now he seems to be on the right path. And the fact that he's mentally tough right now, like he's dialed in, that says it all. And again, like you said, it's too early to write Samsonov off because of what he did last season. If he's able to get back to where he was last season, then you have no goalie controversy. But at the moment, it seems like one is being one is taking advantage of the other situation right now. And I think that's what Wall needs to do. And he's just got to play his game. And it's up to Samsonov to match that competition and stay up with Joseph Wall to say, hey, I'm not going quietly at this point.
Well, Peter, we talked about Ilya Samsonov and how he signed that 1-year prove it deal. So in other words, he was betting on himself. And while Ilya Samsonov bets on himself, you can bet using DraftKings. How about that segue?
That was perfect.
I'm trying to come up with a good segue. I know Andrew always does those good segues. I'm doing my best to fill his shoes over here, okay? The NFL season is going strong, and DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking new customers up with an offer that's even stronger. Bet $5 on any game this week to score $200 instantly in bonus bets. And DraftKings isn't stopping there. All customers can take advantage of a sweetener offer every game day this October. Get in on the game day greatness. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code THPN. That is THPN for the Hockey Podcast Network, our partners here. New customers can score $200 instantly in bonus bets when you bet $5 on the NHL. That is code THPN only on DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. The crown is yours. If you have a gambling problem, you can call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY, which is 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problems with gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, licensee partner Golden Nugget Lake Charles, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See sportsbook.draftkings.com/football terms for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. Well, Peter, we are moving into the second half of the show right here. It's time to stray away from the Leafs and stray towards some of the bigger talking points in hockey. And I guess we should start off with something that broke today. And I know that you being a big draft guy, you'll have a lot to say on this topic. The NHL's owners have, the majority of the NHL's owners, I should say, have moved forward with the motion to vote in favor of a decentralized draft. So before you get into your take on it, Peter, for maybe anyone listening right now that's not dialed into the draft and doesn't know what that means, what is a decentralized draft? And then once you kind of give us the cliff notes on it, what do you think of it?
Yeah, I'm going to keep this, you know, short and easy. So basically, a decentralized draft is basically what you see in the NBA and the NFL draft, where you have the players available there. They go up and they do their thing when they get selected, but the team is at home and making the selections and doing everything away. Even let's go back to 2020 when we had that online draft that kind of felt like decentralized because, you know, we couldn't meet in person. With COVID, the pandemic and everything like that, everyone did it from their own, you know, arena space, what have you. That's going to be the same thing at this point. They're going to be following in the steps of, you know, the other major league sports where it's just the players there, no teams, no draft floor, no nothing, none of the breaking trades or whatever, but it'll probably happen behind the scenes, mainly because of, Elliot Friedman on his 32 thoughts. I believe it was more like becoming around a thing where it's like, you know, cost could be an issue. The draft is also so close to free agency where, you know, teams have to get the book ready or flip from, you know, their scouting reports over to what they need to do to build a team and start with the free agency in a short amount of time. And I kind of get that, but so basically the cliff notes ended before I got into the whole, free agency and all that, the cost thing. Like, that's the reason why a lot of them like voted in favor for it. But, as someone that went through the last two drafts, and I think the decentralized one is probably going to be aiming for 2025. I hope that's the case because I would love the opportunity to go to Vegas and cover the draft as, you know, I think Elliot Friedman said it, one last hurrah, go out with a bang, right? I think, as someone who just got into, getting credentialed to go to these events, combine draft, what have you. I'm a big fan of going there because you get to interact with everybody. You get to see the do the interviews and media up front with the players, you know, staff, teams, whatever, but also just meeting all the other reporters from other different outlets. I think that was huge because, especially, you know, for someone like me where, you know, coming out of that pandemic, this is a huge opportunity to, you know, just attend these events again. And I will never forget the 2 years that I was in Montreal and Nashville, but I'm just not a big fan of it because of that, you know, gathering, because of everyone getting together, talking behind the scenes, getting the inside info behind the scenes as well was kind of fun. It's just a little bit disappointing because also throughout the years, I'm so used to seeing everyone on the draft floor on TSN, on Sportsnet, when whoever is covering the draft. I always love seeing the teams there. Call me old fashioned, but I'm just not a big fan of it for a lot of reasons that I just listed. And yeah, it basically sucks.
Yeah, you know what? You have a unique perspective because you've actually been able to attend some of these drafts. So I understand that fully. And you know what? I'm somebody who I would love to attend a draft someday as well.
Yeah.
That's something that I've been gunning towards potentially doing at some point. And, you know, obviously the decentralized draft would ensure that is not a possibility. So, I tend to side with you on that. I feel like the general fan who just watches the draft from home and doesn't really have any intel or any reason to want to go, I feel like they're probably going to complain about this to start, but then they'll forget about it real quickly. But for people who actually go to the draft and actually are involved with these things, it is unfortunate because, you know, all of a sudden you're taking away the teams from being there. There's not going to be any scouts there. There's not going to be any media there. You've basically got the NHL and you've got the prospects.
Just the main network that's going to be holding it.
Exactly. So I do think that is unfortunate. And there's also another thing that I saw today that honestly might have some implications here. This comes from Account for Hockey. He says, the biggest reason I didn't want the NHL draft to be decentralized is that I think there will be fewer edges to be found in the NHL draft betting markets if NHL media can't meet scouts in person. And normally this is something that I would look past, but I won $60 on Leo Carlson going second overall to the Ducks this year. Mm-hmm. And the only reason that I did that was because Ryan Kennedy tweeted something about 20 minutes before the draft saying, I'm hearing increasing rumblings that Leo Carlson is going to go second overall to Atlanta, to Anaheim and not Adam Fantilli. And so I said, you know what, screw it. And I threw $20 down on it and I won 60. So,
That's huge too. Like the inside info, like, as soon as that happened, everyone started circulating that, you know what, Ducks to Carlson seemed like a really big thing. Because earlier in the day, nobody had that inclination until, you know, people started picking each other's brains. What could possibly happen? That is going to be huge. Where, you know, you're not going to have those insiders on the – I mean, the insiders will still do their job because they have all the connections. But it's like seeing that on the floor is very interesting and just exciting in itself.
And that's, you know, that's one part that is going to suffer one way or another is the vibes and having everybody there. You know, we should just put Ryan Reeves at the draft. That would bring the vibes up.
That'll be fun.
By 1,000%.
Oh, yeah.
Have him announce all the picks. Can you imagine?
Beautiful.
One last thing to get to here, Peter. And, you know, when we talk about social causes on this show, a lot of the time it's in a negative light because a lot of the time we're talking about the NHL bending over backwards and finding different ways to just turn things into the worst possible situations. And, you know, whenever we talk about whether it's pride or whether it's Black Lives Matter or whether it's a protest over anything, every single time, The message behind it is the NHL is fucking up here. Mm-hmm. And let me tell you right now, this is the first time I think on this show that we've had a social cause to discuss, but we're actually talking about it in a positive light. So if you missed it, Travis Dermott essentially single-handedly reversed the NHL's ban on pride tape or specialty tape or supporting specialty causes in general. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I am not saying, and I want to make this very clear right now. I am not saying the NHL deserves no credit for this, because they're it's just like when you talk about, you know, Doug, not to put a provincial thing on this, but when you talk about Doug Ford reversing the decision to open up the green belt in Ontario, he doesn't deserve credit for that because he's just correcting a mistake that he made. I mean, good for you for correcting it, but that's the
it's too late
here, right?
Yeah.
Either way, I think we can all agree that we'd much rather see the NHL reverse this ban on Pride tape than stick to their guns in this situation. And just the fact that of all players to do it, it was Travis Dermott. It was a guy on a one-year contract playing for the Arizona Coyotes, former Leaf to boot. This is a guy who stood up to the NHL, said, fuck your ban, I'm still going to use Pride tape. And the result, the NHL backed down. They said, okay, we're going to lift this ban. So, Peter, let's hear some thoughts on this. Yes, that's true.
Good on Travis Dermott.
I wish I had a sound effect for a round of applause, but maybe get that for next time.
I mean, good on Travis Dermott. I mean, he basically called their bluff, and because no matter what happened, the NHL does not come out of this looking well. If they did go through and punish him, they would have been, criticized even more. And if they didn't and they go back, which they did, they still, folded because they knew what they did, what they knew they were in the wrong. They knew that this was a bad decision to do, because now the Pride tape, like you said, military night, hockey fights cancer, Black Lives Matter, all of that, it had a trickle down effect for all causes. And like you said, for someone on a 1-year contract to do this, and we know how involved Travis Dermott is involved with the LGBTQ plus community, and how well or how important this is to him. And for him to basically just say, yeah, you know what? I'm going to put tape on here. I don't care what you're going to do. What are you going to do about it? NHL was dead silent, and yeah, they reversed it. Great. But like you said, it doesn't matter because you initially implemented it, and now you bringing that back just shows that you were wrong. And I'm not disappointed, but I wanted more players to do it, whether it was beforehand or after. I know Scott Laughton said, I think a lot of players were still going to do it when the time came, when it was, the Pride festivities or the weekend or the Pride game, when they would play, when they did have the jerseys, the sticks, logos, what have you. I think a lot of them still would have gone through with it. And I'm, when Scott Laughton said, I'm still going to do it no matter what, that was just a big, like you said, a big middle finger to the league. Morgan Riley came out, saying that he's going to still support the community. Connor McDavid as well. I just wanted to see a little bit more, like more players doing it. But you know what? It was a big stepping stone and a big step to show that, you know what? We don't care what you think. We're still going to go through with it. What are you going to do about it? So that to me is huge. Again, good on Travis Dermott for doing that, because, the league faced a lot of backlash with this. And you know what? This is still a nightmare for them, because they put through with this. Players were outspoken about it. And now, I mean, still the damage is done as a result of this. But yeah, I mean, glad they did it, but kind of not necessarily too little too late, but the fact that they had to come out with a statement, they say they have the option to voluntarily represent social causes. That just said it all. That just means, like, even if you, and again, I hate that this happened, because they did this because a small minority of the players,
they were coddled against them. It.
They coddled them. I'm still baffled that, seven or so players had more of a say than the whole entire league. What does that say? And I know. I said this last week or that last episode when we talked about this. It's just, what are you doing? Like, that's just where I'm at right now too. But yeah,
it's just like I said last week. All it did was tell us what we already knew, that the NHL already had these beliefs. They didn't really. I mean, we say that they coddled the seven minority fans that were pissed off and didn't want to wear the Pride jerseys and warm up and all that. Mm-hmm. But the NHL didn't cave to anybody. The NHL was already there, right? Yeah. Like the only reason that they ever voiced any support for Pride in the first place was for optics. Like they didn't do it because they care about the LGBTQ community. They did it because they didn't want to be quote unquote canceled by the fans.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's again, like I, just like I said at the start, the NHL doesn't deserve credit for this. We're not applauding the NHL for reversing this decision. I'm applauding Travis Dermott for forcing them to do that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I agree with you. It would be nice to see more players step up and do this and have there be more of a response. But for Travis Dermott, a guy that, you know, this is not a Connor McDavid. And I'm not bringing up his skill level because I'm the only reason I'm bringing up his skill level here is because this is a guy who, you know, could easily lose his job. If a team decided they didn't like the message he was trying to spread, they could easily can him. But this is a guy who's not a Connor McDavid in the league. He's not a Nathan MacKinnon. He's not an Austin Matthews. He's Travis Dermott. He steps up and he basically defies the NHL and says, no, I'm going to keep going with this. I thought for sure when he announced that he was going to, when he applied Pride tape there, I thought for sure that the outcome was going to be that the NHL fined him and he ate the fine and that was it.
Yeah.
But the fact that they actually went ahead and reversed it goes to show that these players do have power and they can make a statement when they want to. So it would be nice, like you said, to see some more of this in the future. All right, Peter. Well, that's more or less wraps up everything that we have had to do today. We have made it through. We've successfully made it through an episode of Six in the Six without our leader, Andrew Forbes. So
wishing him the best.
Hopefully all is well with him.
Mm-hmm.
Peter, I guess I'll use this last point right here to ask if you've got anything coming up that you want to plug.
Something. So because the NHL came out with the whole new edge thing, I'm really intrigued with this the stat tracking and everything like that. So I'm working on something in regards to some of the like known stats in there for the Leafs. And it's really interesting. I'm starting to get some info on that or doing preliminary research before the actual writing process. But it does look fun with all this new info coming out.
It does look like a lot of fun. And I checked it out the other day for myself and I knew it was going to be fun once I saw that John Tavares had the third highest top speed of any player on the Leafs, which is weird to see because we always hear about how washed he is and how much his legs aren't there anymore. He's still got wheels. We've seen that. Yeah. And we're going to continue to see that. So Peter, it was great doing this with you today. You can follow Peter on Twitter at @pbarachini. You can follow myself at @ahobsonmedia. We'll give Andrew the plug, even though he's not here. You can follow Andrew on social media on Twitter at @AndrewGForbes. All right, Peter, you ready? I'm going to see if I can nail this. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter at @StixInTheSixPod. That is at @StixInTheSixPod. Look at that.
There you go. Nailed it.
I nailed it. Let's go. So you can follow all of us on our socials and we will catch you next time for episode 139 of Sticks in the Six. We'll talk to you later, Leafs Nation.